Radio 4.
Looking back, he started to change, more controlling. It saddened me because I felt like I'd really hurt my dad.
You blamed yourself?
Absolutely.
Michael Burke hears a harrowing account of abuse and its consequences.
He kind of had this grip and this hold on me that I couldn't escape. Maybe he held the key to my peace and my salvation in my mind.
The Choice. Tomorrow morning at 9 and again in the evening at 9:30.
And now on BBC Radio 4, a new book at bedtime is Owen Colfer's much-anticipated sequel to Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. And Another Thing, the sixth novel in the ever more increasingly inaccurately named Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy.
If you own a copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, then you already know all about the most remarkable book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. However, presumption has been the runner-up in every major causes of intergalactic conflict poll for the past few millennia. First place invariably going to land-grabbing bastards with big weapons. If, out of sheer brain-fogging boredom, you type the words The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy into the search bar, an animated icon will appear, informing you that there are three results, which is confusing, as there are obviously five listed below. Scroll past the five, ignoring the offers to lengthen your palm wrangler, and you will come to a line in tiny font that reads, "If you like this, then you might also like to read..." Have your icon rub itself along this link, and you will be led to a text-only appendix,
in which the old man on the beach traced two natural numbers in the sand with a walking stick fashioned from a discarded robot leg. He watched as the waves washed them away. One moment there was 42, and the next there wasn't. Maybe the numbers were never there, and perhaps they didn't even matter. At the centre of an uncertain and possibly illusory universe, was there anything to trust? Anything to take comfort from? The china teapot on his veranda table twinkled. Ah, yes, thought the old man. There would always be tea. He called to his android to bring some biscuits. The android brought rich tea. Good choice. Seconds later, the sudden appearance of a hovering metal bird caused a momentary lapse in dunking concentration. "Oh, for heaven's sake!" grumbled the man. "Dunking and sandwiches, what else are left to a person?" The bird was unperturbed. "Battery," it said, in a voice that reminded the old man of an actor he'd once seen playing Othello at London's Globe Theatre. "Battery," said the bird again. And suddenly reality cracked and fell to pieces like a shattered mirror. The beach disappeared, the waves evaporated. The last thing to go was the rich tea. "Bugger," muttered the old man. Then he sat back on a cushion in the room of sky that suddenly surrounded him. Someone would be coming soon, he was sure of it. From the dim caverns of his memories, the names Ford and Prefect emerged. Whenever the universe fell apart, Ford Prefect was never far behind. The old man poked a finger in one of the wall's yielding surfaces, and through it caught a glimpse of a double-height sash window beyond. And outside the window, could that be a death ray? All this time, he thought, and nothing has happened. Ford Prefect was living the dream in one of Han Wavell's ultra-luxury, five supergiant-rated hedonistic resorts, filling his waking hours with permanent damage amounts of exotic cocktails and liaisons with exotic females of various species. And the best bit, every morning, even after a third gargle blaster, no hangovers, no dragon breath, and the expense would be taken care of by his Dino Charge card, which had no credit limit, thanks to a little creative computer tinkering on his last visit to the Hitchhiker's Guide offices. "You are a fruity dude," Ford Prefect invariably told himself. Yes, you are. On the last day, Ford charged an underwater massage to his credit card. The masseur was a Damagranian pom-pom squid. Pom-pom squids were generally hugely overqualified for their work in the spa industry, but were tempted away from their umpteenth doctorates by the lure of high salaries, plankton-rich pools, and the chance of massaging a talent scout for the music industry, and maybe getting themselves a record deal.
"Have you done any talent scouting, friend?"
asked the squid, as he pummeled Ford's back with 11 tentacles and 1,000 suckers. "Nope," replied Ford, bubbles streaming from his plexiglass helmet. "Though I once owned a pair of blue suede shoes."
"Oh, for Zark's sake, 2 years I've worked here. Talent scouts and agents coming out of your suckers, they promised. Not one, not bloody one. I was studying advanced kazoo, you know."
The squid flipped Ford over. Ford opened one eye to read the squid's badge. "I am Barzoo," read the tag. "Use me as you will." "So, Barzoo, what kind of stuff did you play?" "Barzoo?" "Battery," said the squid, its beak clicking on the T's. "Battery." "I never noticed before," thought Ford. "But that squid looks a lot like a bird." Then the underwater massage cave dissolved, and Ford Prefect found himself deposited in a room composed of blue sky. A familiar figure sat in the opposite corner.
"Ah,"
said Ford, remembering, followed quickly by, "Oh, crap." He stepped gingerly across the floor of sky.
"Look on the bright side, old mate," he called to the Earthman. "At least you're not lying down in front of a bulldozer, eh? At least we're not being flushed out of a Vogon airlock, remember that? A room of sky is not too shabby as it happens. It could be worse, a lot worse.
And it surely will be if I'm right about what's going on here," thought Ford. But he didn't voice this opinion. Arthur Dent looked as though he'd had quite enough bad news for one day. Interplanetary news reporter Trillian Astra was heading into the auditorium for possibly the biggest interview of her life. Galactic President Random Dent, her daughter, simulcast from the University of Maximegalon live to an audience of 500 billion. She was nervous. She was terrified. Trillian had not seen her daughter since...
My God,
she realised. I cannot remember precisely the last time I saw Random. Random had been conceived in a low-grav fertility satellite clinic near Barnard's star. She had every right to feel displaced. Her father was a test tube. Her home planet, insofar as she had one, had been destroyed in several dimensions. And her mother had taken one look at her and decided to vigorously pursue a career that would take her far from home for long periods. Trillian could hear the crowd beyond the curtain. President Random Dent was sitting cross-legged in a hovering egg chair. She was stroking a small ball of mewling fur around her neck.
"Mother, this is my companion Fertile, a Flaybus, fully grown. We were married yesterday. I wanted you here to introduce your son-in-law to the galaxy. It will be your crowning moment as a journalist, and it will bring us together as a family."
Trillian's skin tightened.
"You can't marry a rodent!"
"Battery," said Fertile, through a tiny mouth that now seemed to have a beak.
"What?" said Trillian. "Did I just hear a Flaybu speak?"
"Battery," said Fertile again.
The velvet curtain rose slowly, but there was no audience, just an auditorium of sky and two humanoid figures.
"What's happening?"
said the president, her voice higher suddenly.
"Mother, where are my journalists?"
"Don't panic," said Trillian, trying to keep the quaver from her voice. You two men, what have you done? I demand to know where we are."
Ford Prefect, poking the wall with his finger, said, "I think the question should be, when are we? Then possibly, who put us here? Followed by, is there a drinks trolley?"
"Do you mind?" said a voice that seemed to come from everywhere. "My needles are on red as it is. If you could just sit still, I can hold this construct together a while longer."
"So you're saying this whole room is a construct?"
"It's a construct, Betelgeusean."
The sky walls disappeared altogether, replaced by several representations of a robotic bird tapping a claw impatiently.
"Ah,"
said Ford. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Mark II, I thought as much. I haven't seen you since... well, since you tried to get the Earth blasted to pieces. Not since way back then, said the bird. Imagine. So, how about a video? Said Ford. The Mark II scowled. Didn't you hear me? The needles are on red. I can't hold the waiting lounge together for much longer. Oh, nothing fancy, just some 2D animation. Old school stuff. I know you can do it if you really want to. The bird rolled its eyes dramatically, then disappeared from one of the walls. In its place, a black screen opened, and on the screen were four neon stick figures and a cartoon bird. Blue beams fanned from the bird's wingtips, entering the humanoid's heads through one ear, then exiting through the other ear and converging on the Mark II's forehead. So you sent us to sleep and gave us a dream. I gave you life for a long time. But it was virtual life. We didn't go anywhere. Correct. Anywhere or anywhen. Ford poked the wall again. How far back? Club Beta. Club Beta? Ah, that bongs a gong for some reason. Club Dingly Dangly Beta. Holy Shankwursters, we're still in the club? And no time has passed? Why? For Zuck's sake, why? Mark II rolled its pixelated eyes. Random Dent made the request. She is my secondary master. When the human miner realised that the entire planet was about to be destroyed, she expressed regret that she had not been allowed to live her life as she would have wished. Granting that wish did not conflict with my primary directive, and she included her parents and their dim-witted friends in her thoughts. Secondary master, said Ford, ignoring the insult. Who's the primary? The Vogons. They created me so that I could cajole you back to Earth before the Grebulons destroyed it. Which is happening now. Now, as you know it, yes. Will we be rescued? Probably not. Mark II crossed its wings across its breast. 100 years of maintaining 4 universes has depleted my power source. In 5 virtual minutes, this room will disappear, and you will be left on Earth facing the planet-killer beams of the Grebulons. 5 minutes? And counting, said Mark II, fading from view. Where the bird had been, there appeared several digital readouts, which said 4:57, then 4:56. You get the picture. Ford turned to face the three humans who were busy doing their utmost to avoid being the least bit civil to each other. Arthur! Yelled the elder of the two women. Daddy! Screamed the younger. I'm an old man, said Arthur, hopefully. Leave me alone. Old? Said the elder. What are you talking about, old? You look exactly the same as you did the last time I saw you. It was as Arthur feared. All those years alone on his beach, and now he was back in the universe with people shouting at him, and no idea what was going on. 4 minutes. That is so bloody typical of this galaxy. I finally get my daughter back, and now we're all about to be blown to pieces. Ford punched his shoulder jovially. No, no, we go back to reality in 4 minutes. It will take the Grebulons at least 30 minutes to carve up the whole planet with death beams. 2:37, said the digital readout. Hmm, said Ford. That's a little strange. Then 10, 9. The bird reappeared, its image striated with lines of interference. Sorry, all this shouting is draining my battery, negative energy. And the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Mark II disappeared, taking with it the tranquil room of sky. Arthur, Trillian, Random and Ford found themselves deposited on the men's room stairs in Stavro Mueller's swanky, until very recently, Club Beta, their memories of virtual lives dissipating like mist in the sunlight. The air was alive with screaming and the thrum and buzz of Grebulon death rays. Ford? Yes, Arthur, old mate. Shouldn't we be coming up with a plan?
And Another Thing by Owen Colfer was abridged by Penny Lester and read by Stephen Mangan with Peter Suranovich. It was produced by Heather Lummer. You can hear episode 2 at the same time tomorrow night. In a couple of minutes, we lend an ear to some literary highlights in the life of the poet Brian Patton.